For everybody, I just want to make an announcement that myself and Ms. Norwood are here. We have other members that are around, so we're going to give them at least 5 minutes to get a couple other council members before we start our presentation. All right, we're going to go ahead and get started. I said we wait 5 minutes for a quorum. I'm hoping that we will get a quorum before we're done. And I would like to try to wrap the meeting up as close to noon as I can. I've got two people that I'm giving a proclamation to and having a little awards reception for them. So let's go ahead and get started. My name is Councilmember Felicia Moore, Chair of the Committee on Council. To my right is Councilmember Mary Norwood. We do not have a quorum, but we're going to proceed anyway with our agenda. as much as we can without a quorum. And the first item we had was public comment pertaining to items on the agenda. Either we can take those comments now or they can wait until we have a quorum and we know we're going to have a meeting. We are also joined by Councilmember Joy Shepherd. We'll get one more and we'll be in business. Good morning. Mr. Howard? Okay, there you go.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam President and committee members. Ben Howard, Senior Advocate. Madam President, when we get down to the presentation by the ethics officer, I'm hoping we can get a comment on why the ethics office mandates that people declare that they are working for the city, but does not mandate that the people declare in what capacity that they are working. It seems to me that we're working, there's a shortage of data here if we're going to talk about ethics. Not only should we know that they are among the many hundreds of employees who are working, but if we know what capacity they're working, then maybe we can gain some ethical and empirical data that will help us understand why it's even required for them to file that they're an employee. So we'll see if that comes down the pipe. And then also I'd like to hear, I don't see it in the written handout, some information about how many complaints have been received by neighborhood planning units and rejected because the ethics law is so weak that the ethics officer can use as an excuse this is not part of our purview. Thank you.
Thank you. And before she comes, Mr. Howard, I think I mentioned this to you before.
Okay.
And I think it's a mischaracterization to say that the ethics laws are weak. As a matter of fact, I think the city of Atlanta has probably some of the strongest, if not the strongest, local ethics laws. Now, yeah. The question is, what are the things that are under the purview of the ethics committee and the ethics board? And a lot of the issues, or some of the issues that have been raised related to neighborhood planning units, do not fall under that section of the code called standards of conduct. So when they say to you, this is not an issue for the ethics board, it's because they only have a set number of regulations that they can hear. And it's not that the code is weak, it's just that the type of issue that you have doesn't fall under that jurisdiction.
Yes, and so whose obligation is it to expand that the code so that concerns of the people will fall under the code and subsequently under the purview of the ethics officer?
That's a good question. I'm going to answer it for you. I want to say that we're joined by Councilmember Natalie Archibong. We do have a quorum, so I will officially call the meeting to order. I've introduced the members. Without objection from the committee, we'll adopt the agenda. And without objection from the committee, we will approve the minutes. I'll entertain a motion on the adoption of the full council agenda. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye. Those opposed, hearing none, it's approved. And we will continue now with the public's from the public comment pertaining to items on the agenda. And Mr. Howard, I would say that you're looking at a part of the body that does that.
Okay.
The ethics code was created by the Atlanta City Council. The first part of it was done during the Franklin administration after she had a commission made recommendations. The council tweaked it, and it was approved. And over the years, any changes to that code have come through the Atlanta City Council. So if you're asking how does that code change, at this point, particularly as me as chair of the Committee on Council, we can certainly look at any recommendations that we have, but I think that we always want to work in cooperation with the ethics officer and the ethics board to make any changes to that code to make sure everybody is in sync.
Okay.
But I think some of the complaints that you're having related to MPUs, I believe, this is just one council member speaking, would be better handled in a form that's created or a process that's created under the planning department.
Okay, appreciate it. Yes, thank you.
All right. Now we will go to Ms. Nina Hickson, who is our ethics officer, who we had requested to come on a quarterly basis to give a report, and I've such in discussing with her, we'll amend that because, first of all, maybe the if there are issues that arise, and secondly, we don't want to add any unnecessary work, but she did say she has some things to share with us, and we're looking forward to hearing about it. So, Ms. Hickson, you have the floor.
Good morning, members of the committee. I'm Nina Hickson, ethics officer for the City of Atlanta. First, on behalf of the board, I'd like to thank you for the invitation to come to the Committee on Council to talk about areas of concern regarding the work of the ethics board. We welcome the opportunity to have this discussion, for one, because we know that the ethics of an organization is a lot of times set by the tone at the top. And so to the extent that the City Council signals that this is very important, then it gets translated down to the city employees who are also impacted by the ethics code. As you mentioned, Councilmember Moore, the Atlanta Code is seen as a very strong code and one that is a best practice in light of the fact that that we have an independent board that actually oversees the administration of the code. The particular format that we work under was an iteration that was passed back in 2003, as you indicated, as a result of some work of a task force. And there have been various amendments since that time, but it stayed pretty much intact. In terms of questions about reporting complaints that we receive and we either determine that there's no jurisdiction, that kind of information can be obtained from the website. We do maintain our minutes as well as our monthly reporting on those issues as well as an annual report on the website. We also distribute to the City Council at the end of each year a report or an annual report on the activities of the board. Finally, in terms of the employees, we do know, while the public record of the financial disclosure does not report the particular position of an employee, it's information that we do receive from the filings and is contained in our records. It's also, you know, a matter of public record, so it's not any kind of secret that's being kept in terms of the positions of employees. And we will talk later in the presentation about financial disclosure and how it's determined who actually has to file. So I'd like to start with the first page, the highlights from 2015. I'd like to focus on our training, which I think is the most important function that we provide as an ethics board. Secondly, the investigations and enforcement. And thirdly, public education and outreach. In 2015, we provided classroom training on the code to 908 city employees. Last year, we also began our online or e-learning training, which afforded us an opportunity to provide more training because individuals can take that training online. Just by way of background, this is a project that started soon after I arrived, actually right before I arrived, where the office itself wrote the curriculum, wrote the scripts, auditioned city employees to be actors and actresses in the actual videos. The videotaping was done at Watershed Management. And we finally were able to issue. It took a long time, but it's work that we did ourselves. We didn't pay anybody to do. And so since we've been able to generate that, we've been able to increase our numbers almost five times in terms of the numbers of individuals who are being trained on the ethics code. As you can see by the chart, what we did was a staggered rollout of the e-learning course with smaller departments starting first so that we could work out kinks, but eventually to have the larger departments to do it. And we're pleased to report that we've had generally good kind of participation in the ethics e-learning course. We'd like to say that we are particularly pleased with Parks and Rec, where we have a 95% participation rate, as well as Public Works, which is a large department. We've had 82% of their population to take part in the Ethics E-Learning course. And if they're once they're successful, they get a certification indicating that they successfully completed. It becomes a part of the personnel file, and it makes them compliant with the administrative order issued by the mayor requiring training once every 3 years. So we're very pleased with that. There are some departments we'd like to see a little more cooperation, but we are grateful at least that we're getting our message out and seem to be doing it in an efficient manner. 2015, we received 35 reports on the integrity line. We opened 8 new ethics cases as a result, issued 2 cease and desist orders, closed 10 cases, assessed over $20,000 in fine, and have collected $11,000 to this point. We are not a revenue generator, and that's not what we're intended to do. The sanctions are by way of a lot of times reimbursement and punitive sanctions. The other point I want to make in terms of the integrity line, that sometimes we get a bad rap about it because we get a number of calls. But as I understand in talking with other people who do this work, it's very common for hotlines to receive primarily human resources or personnel-related calls, which is what we get a lot of times, which is not those are not actions that the Ethics Board has jurisdiction over. However, as a part of our triage, what happens is when an integrity line complaint comes in, it is reviewed by a representative from the ethics office, the compliance office, and the city law department, and the auditor's office. At that point, that committee determines which entity would best serve that particular complaint. To the extent that there's a human resources matter, those matters are directed to the human resources department, and we have an internal reporting process where we determine if any progress has been made in that regard.
We're joined by Councilmember Clayton Winslow.
The next page, our public education and outreach. We distributed over 2,000 wallet cards, brochures, and materials related to our Integrity at Work campaign. We did 8 public news blasts on our website, as well as we did email blasts throughout the city raising issues of examples in terms of ethical decision making. We held a lunch and learn, which was very successful, on the issue of gifts and gratuities. We also published two ELEP newsletters regarding ethics matters. The next page is one of the issues that we thought we needed to talk about before the council, and that is a new formal advisory opinion that was issued this year regarding what's commonly referred to as the cooling off period. That's that 1-year period of time from the time that a person leaves the employment of the city and begins to work for another entity. And the question being, what are the limitations or parameters in terms of any work that's done with the city? In 2005, the Ethics Board issued a formal advisory opinion in which it interpreted that provision of the code pretty broadly and indicated that within that year period, there should be essentially no contact between that individual and the city on behalf of any other entity. We were challenged this year and sought the advice of counsel, and based on the language that's contained in that provision, the Ethics Board issued a new clarifying opinion in which it decided that the language was very narrow, and so the actual prohibition is a narrow one that essentially says that if you're an employee and you were working on particular issues while you were here at the city, that's what you're precluded from being involved with for a year after you leave. And so if you leave the city, and although you may, you're able to use your expertise, you can't be involved in a matter that you were specifically involved in, but you can actually use your expertise to benefit other entities. The second part of that opinion related to public employment, because the contention was that the code itself did not deal with those individuals who left the employment of the city and worked for other public entities, the argument being that there should be a presumption that there's no conflict. The position that the board took was that while they will agree that there should be a presumption, but it was not an absolute presumption, and that each employment situation after leaving the city that involves a public entity needs to be reviewed to make sure that there is no conflict, because conceivably there could be one. To that extent, the board has made some recommendations in terms of a code change on the public employment portion. However, the board has not taken an official position with regard to whether the code language needs to be amended to be consistent with its prior more broad ruling on the issue of the cooling off period. So that was an issue that we wanted to bring to the attention of council. I think we shared it with you by way of letter, but we're doing it now in the committee on council so that everyone has the benefit of that information. We also have updated our we've also provided a formal advisory opinion with regard to financial disclosure and those individuals who have to file. The board has also made a recommendation that there needs to be some amending of the code to provide for language which anticipates that a number of the positions that are specifically listed in the code can sometimes change in terms of responsibilities as well as the actual titles. And so there are some provisions that the board is recommending so that we can cover those areas. But the board is also recommending that there be some language which would allow some discretion on the part of the ethics officer to do a risk analysis to determine those areas where you've got a high risk of potential ethical violations and therefore or potential conflicts of interest, and therefore those positions should be mandated to provide financial disclosures. So it's our hope that the language will be coming to you very shortly with those two proposals from the Board of Ethics. The next item relates to the upcoming budget. That season has begun, and we've begun our meetings with the Finance Department. The board has two major initiatives that it will be discussing with the council as well as the administration for the budget. One has to do with our annual financial disclosure season and the infrastructure that's used for that. When the process started over 10 years ago, a vendor was hired. The vendor ended up going out of business, and so we ended up having to hire a developer who has essentially patched together a system for the last 10 years. He has given us notice that as of 2018 he will no longer be able to provide that service, and has recommended that we look at developing or purchasing a new system which will be in place in 2018. And so as a part of this year's budget, we will be seeking capital funds in an amount not to exceed $300,000 to be able to create a system that has greater efficiencies and better usage. And so that proposal will be coming to you all as a part of the budget, or it's our hope it'll come to you as a part of our budget request. And finally, an additional position for an annual financial disclosure analyst. This is the result of a question that was asked at the last budget hearing by Council Member Shook, who asked if we could design our ideal ethics office, what would it look like and what would we have. And we provided some background information about the need to have someone who can actually do a review of our annual financial disclosures to actually do a deeper dive in terms of conflicts of interest. As it stands now, our review of that is basically reactive. If we hear something or somebody reports something, then we'll look into it, but we don't really do anything on a proactive basis, primarily because it's very voluminous and we don't have the personnel to do it. We did, however, ask that the audit department, and they did conduct an audit of the 2014, and you all will be receiving that report soon. They did an evaluation of the annual financial disclosure process and how it can be approved, and Among the improvements include the change in the code language, which I've already talked about, as well as having an actual review done of the forms that are filed. Again, I've already discussed the, oh, I did, I went backwards, I'm sorry. Financial disclosure, we are in the midst of that season right now. We've got 2,555 required filers. It opened on March the 1st. Since that time, we've had a filing rate of 60%. I already mentioned the formal advisory opinion on that matter, and I'd like to announce that today we are doing e-filing in the City Hall atrium. So anybody who needs to file, who hasn't filed, you can go downstairs. Someone from my staff is downstairs to help you through that electronic process, and we'll be there for the rest of the business day. We also offered it this past Saturday as a part of the APAP meeting, and then we will be going, I believe, to Watershed to offer an opportunity to do it there. But we are on track in terms of timely filing, and which ultimately results in our Transparent Diamond Awards, which we have given over the past 2 years during the first meeting in June of the City Council, where we recognize those departments that have done 100% timely filing and the larger departments who have done usually between 97-95% of a timely filing. So that concludes the presentation I intended to make today, and I'm available for any questions that you might have.
Yeah, I have a couple. One, particularly in Watershed, I had an employee who hadn't received, didn't even know what it was. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, you need to call the ethics office and talk. That they just up and got one of these forms and said, hey, you're required to file this. And they're not understanding why they're getting it this year. They had never gotten it before.
Right.
And then the position that the person in didn't make sense as well, because they don't have any contact with the public or vendors at all. So I'm trying to understand what has happened.
What we do, there are a couple of things that happens in that instance. And part of what we do during this time is to answer those kinds of questions. Within the past 2 years, because there had been some job code changes, we have done a review to the best extent we can to determine who falls under the categories who needs to file. Sometimes there are errors made, and we will acknowledge those errors and take the person off of the list if they don't qualify as a risk. Sometimes the title is not consistent with the duties that they're doing, and so we'll make an adjustment. But we have to do an evaluation, and we would just encourage that person to contact us.
And I will tell them, I did tell them that, and we'll follow up to say, you know, just call, you know, let them know what your position is. Because, like I said, well, I don't know why you're getting it based on what you do. You're not talking with the public. You're not interacting with vendors, so I don't know why.
But sometimes they may be classified in a code where that is typically what the duty is, and then we find out it's not, and we'll make an adjustment. It's not an exact, and we're hoping to get more exacting in what we're doing, but we do work with individuals if there's a concern.
Okay. The other question you answered in that the changes that you're talking about, you will bring those before the committee at some point. Once they make a decision on both of the...
Well, on the part about the 1 year cooling off period, but
right.
We have presented some language, and we will bring it to the council.
The other one was the... Something else you said you were working on, the financial disclosure piece?
Right. There's some some language that we're going to propose to amend to clarify who needs to file and the basis upon which a recommendation is being made, and also to allow for the fact that position titles change. And so while the code sets for specific position titles, when people come in, sometimes they change, reorganize. We want to make sure those functions are still covered, even if the title changes.
The other thing is the ethics e-training.
Yes.
Is that required, or is it just a voluntary?
It is not mandated. The mayor has issued an administrative order mandating one training every 3 years. This just provides a vehicle through which an individual can get that training.
And I see Ms. Tangela, maybe we can try to encourage a higher level of participation in that with our council staff, and I assume as council staff, council member staff, et cetera. So, yes. And I'm assuming the clerk's office is in here, too. So
yes.
We can, Ms. Madam Clerk, we can all work to try to get our numbers up so we... Okay. So I don't know who had... Somebody's not doing it. So we just need to find out if you can assist them in telling us who hasn't done it so that we can start targeting those areas. Maybe have a lunch and learn or cyber sit-in or whatever to get it done. I'll let you all respond to that in just a minute. I want to make sure if any other council members had questions of Ms. Hickson. Yes. Ms. Archibald.
It's like at a dinner table. Is this my fork or is this my fork? Okay. This is my fork over here. Okay, great. This arm on the wrong... Excuse me. All right, great. And I'm glad you're an attorney, and so you'll understand my question. I thought about maybe asking the law department, but and I appreciate that you're bringing some suggested legislative items for us to amend the ethics code. At what point, is there a tipping point where we are getting advisory opinions about a topic over and over again, and then you say, well, maybe we need to codify something? Do you leave it up to us to see that? Do you look at that? Law department, are you looking at that? When does that?
There's no formal process. What I can say since I've been here, if something comes up, I will bring it to the board. I'll make a recommendation. They can decide if they want to propose that or not. I will tell you quite candidly that when I first came, the board was really reticent about offering any kinds of proposals for changes to the code, there being a concern that once you begin, that there's a possibility of some slippage. However, there are some things which I believe impact our ability to do our job, and there need to be some changes. And so to that extent, I advocate on that behalf and then attempt to get the board to agree to make those proposals.
Okay, and I can appreciate that. I was talking with an attorney a couple months back, and they were talking about that slippery slope between the opinion versus what should be codified, and right. So I really don't know. Do you have an opinion about that? Is that something we need to be more vigilant on, or whose responsibility is that?
Good morning. Kristen Dennis with the Law Department. We in the past have worked with Ms. Hickson in the Ethics Office, so when the board does identify an area where they'd like to see a change, then we cooperate and we make sure that the legislation gets drafted appropriately. But it really is kind of the board's animal, the ethics. If they have a, they're the ones who are issuing the opinions and making the decisions. So if they see a problem, it's kind of they're the first line. Obviously, if you all saw something that you wanted to change, you would have that option as well because it's you're the body that does it.
What if somebody were to say an attorney were to challenge something and say, well, that's just an opinion, it's not codified, and tell me how that would shake out.
So you mean the advisory opinions that are handed out by the board itself?
Is it stronger if it is codified versus, and Ms. Hickson's nodding her head.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
It's definitely stronger because one of the caveats we have with the formal advisory opinion is we say it provides guidance, but it really is for that particular situation. If you codified it, you know, then there's no question about whether it applies or there's some distinction. So codification, but I think that the people in our profession would say you can't codify everything. You can't anticipate everything. You can't codify it. And you don't want to get to a point where you're so specific that then those things you haven't thought about are not covered but, in fact, need to be covered. So it's a balance that one has to walk. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear that tension and that thoughtfulness is involved in what's happening now. Thank you.
I just have a question. Well, actually, I think someone just asked one of my questions. I think it was Councilmember Moore about the council member, city council members. I was just trying to figure out how we can get our percentages up in terms of the e-learning and how do we get a list of what departments, even in terms of council or another, maybe a much more smaller breakdown of who's doing what. And I don't know if Ms. Williams can answer that or...
I mean, it's information we can provide. Ms. Williams and I have talked throughout this process. And for one, as was clearly indicated, this is not anything that we have mandated. And so to the extent a person has been involved in a prior training within the last 3 years, that will meet the requirements that you all have imposed on them.
So this percentage that you have then is for, is it for 1 year or is it for the last 3 years?
Oh, no, it's for the last few months. We didn't roll this out until July, so it's just the last few months.
Some people may be in line for training.
Okay. So that helps a lot right there to know that too. Okay, so the other question is, up under, you were saying that, y'all don't collect fees for investigations and enforcement. So you have fees of $20,000, you collect $11,000. So what happens if I was somebody and I didn't pay, what would happen?
What under the code, what happens is it goes to the solicitor's office.
Okay. And do y'all do that?
We've not had to make any referrals for collection of fees. Okay. We've made some other referrals, but not for that.
Okay.
Any other questions of Ms. Hickson? I think Ms. Tangela Williams and Ms. Johnson, did you all still need to respond? Are you all good? Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Howard. I'm going to grant you this courtesy, but you did lay out your issues prior to the presentation. So
yes,
make it brief, please.
Thank you. I will. And since then, some other issues have arisen. On that percentage, the chart that Ms. Shepherd was talking about, two comments. Well, one is a question. I'm curious as to how someone gets more than 100%. And that
procurement, I saw that.
Okay, very good.
They've reorganized. Essentially what happened, procurement is going through a reorganization. So based on the baseline that we had when this first came out, they have increased. So that I knew that would come up.
Oh, okay, thank you very much on that. And then I think it might be helpful that there's another comment where the ranking is by percentage, maybe from highest to lowest, because this 0.94% does not look good, but those that have 100% perhaps ought to be recognized. I'm thinking the second column there might be helpful. And then I'm kind of timid about that $300,000. So you may want to think about whether or not you should ask for $500,000 and let them cut it down to $400,000, something there. And I would also like to see published online all the communications that go between ethics and the council that might eventually turn into legislation. I'd like to be able to look at that on the ethics hotline. Now, in regards to things being a matter of public record, most of it is, but there's still that issue of a person who, like Corliss Claire, can acknowledge that she works for the city but not be specific about where. And I was, as I mentioned before, I was told I need to contact Human Resources and the Law Department. I think a citizen should not have to do that. They should be able to see, okay, this person works for the city, and if we don't show what capacity they work in, at least what department they work in, so we can see whether there's a concern. And especially high-powered people, high-profile people, such as the esteemed Corliss Claire.
Okay, and again, we mentioned that, and she will take that under advisement. She heard you, and she mentioned it in her presentation.
All right,
but can I provide a clarification?
Yes.
We've answered that question.
Yes.
Ms. Claire is not an employee of the city. She is she provides services through a contract. Okay. And so that's something that would be, I get this wrong, an Oracle or whatever our system is for maintaining that information.
Thank you. All right.
That's helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome. So let's move on. If there's nothing else for the ethics officer, we have some communications. The first one is to file 16C5011, a communication from Council Member C.T. Martin appointing Ms. Jacole Burton to serve on the Invest in Southwest Task Force as a representative for District 10. The author has asked that we file it. I'll entertain that motion. All those in favor of filing, say aye. Those opposed, hearing none, it is filed. The rest of the items have received favorable recommendation.
Madam Chair, maybe we take item number 4 separately.
Okay. From the respective committees, item number 2, 16C5025, a communication from Council Members Felicia A. Moore, District 9, Clarence C.T. Martin, District 10, Keisha Lance Bottoms, District 11, Joy Shepherd, District 12, and Andre Dickens, Post 3 at large, appointing Mr. Theotis Pace as a member of the Public Safety and Judicial Facilities Authority for the City of Atlanta. This appointment is for a term of 4 years for the city, 4 years, scheduled to begin on the date of council confirmation. Item number 3, 16C5026, a communication from Council Members Felicia A. Moore, District 9, C.T. Martin, District 10, and Andre Dickens, Post 3 at large, appointing Ms. Eunice Glover as a member of the Water and Sewer Appeals Board in the layperson category. This appointment is for a term of 3 years, scheduled to begin on the date of council confirmation. I'll entertain a motion. Motion is to approve item number 2 and 3. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, hearing none, it's approved. Item number 4, 16R3248, an amended resolution by full council appointing Ms. Ayana L. Gabriel to serve on the Atlanta Beltline Incorporated Board of Directors as the Atlanta City Council's Community Engagement Representative. This appointment is for a term of 4 years, scheduled to begin upon adoption of this resolution and for other purposes. It's favorable by CDHR committee. This was the subject of the ballot that we did at the last council meeting. I'll entertain a motion as amended. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed, hearing none, is approved as amended. The papers that are held in committee will continue to be held. The item, so just as an update, the item regarding council online accounts as well as the one in finance, the city one, are going to be moved at some point, but what was expressed at the last work session was to educate the public and see if this is what the public wanted. And so Ms. Norwood and I are working on getting some information out and on that. The other one, item number 6, we're going to continue to hold that. We will have an update on Elms at some point, but we did have at the last meeting a teleconference or a video conference with the provider, and those issues are being worked out as we speak. And so hopefully after recess we'll have a little bit more to report. I also want to report that today in your at the council meeting in your chair will be the evaluation forms for the clerk as well as the director. We have only gotten 4 in the office. Today is the deadline. We hope so I'm asking everyone to take some time during the meeting or now to get it done and get it to us. We anticipate at the next committee on council meeting putting on the agenda and making sure all council members know that we will be going into an executive session so that we can discuss those evaluations so we can have this ticked off of our list. The Elected Officials Compensation Commission, We have put out notices for appointments. The council has an appointment, school board, council president, et cetera. No one has responded. We're going to put that out again. So would you please consider someone who may be interested in serving on that commission for this term? Standing committees, and there's a paper on hold from Mr. Bond related to the committees, but it was also a goal of our committee to do some more review of our code. So what we're going to do is send a email out to everybody and ask them to submit in writing any changes or recommendations or ideas they have related to committee changes. In briefing, I discussed some areas that we might want to look at for changes, and so that will be a subject. I think it'll be better done in a work session with the committee, as well as there is an issue that's emerging that we're trying to get a work session this week or as soon as possible related to the irregularities and poor customer service, et cetera, at the elections and the polls. And so the clerk is calling because we want to have the elections board, We want to have the staff. We want to have them all here. We want to get this done because May is coming up and then November, and we want to get some of these issues resolved. So please keep an eye on your email so that we'll send out when we can meet to get as many people as possible to meet. And those are some of the things that we're working on. Anything that I missed that the committee wanted to bring up? Okay. I need to sign them.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so with that, we will do our final public comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ben Howard, and I just have one issue. And that issue is for the public. I would like to have the clerk's office look for the integrity of the base system, boards, commissions, authorities, etc., that wherever there is on file just one base form, that all boards, including the Atlanta Planning Advisory Board, should not have two representatives. So I'm passing out the bylaws, 5.3 of the bylaws that are on file in the clerk's office, that shows that there's only one person authorized to vote for NPUR, and that person is not, according to the bylaws, is not the chair of NPUR. So I'm asking the clerk to look at that and to bring back to this committee a report in 2 or 3 weeks. Thank you.
I think that, Mr. Howard, this is an issue you need to bring up with the Planning Department and the Community Development Committee. Again, they are the committee of purview related to the NPUs, and it is the Planning Department's responsibility to certify or make sure that these are correct. So if you would share that with them, that is where that issue
I will, but I brought it here because of the base system. So I still think that the forms in the base system ought to be accurate.
I understand, but what you're asking is something that needs to be handled by that department.
All right, thank you.
All right, anything else for the good of the order? If not, we stand adjourned without objection.
Red, I guess, is my question.
The city would be on the hook if we run in the red. We anticipate revenues of in excess of $1 million this year. Net revenue, net operating income.